Welcome to Kin Folklore, where we have gone through a portal and returned to the world of His Dark Materials for Season 3 of the BBC HBO series based on the novels written by Philip Pullman. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andrea. In this episode, we'll consult our alethiometer about episodes 5 and 6 of the final season of His Dark Materials. We'll summarize the episodes, talk a bit about our observations, discuss some of the themes, and look through the amber spyglass for some background. Each week, HBO is releasing 2 episodes, and we will be bringing you all the coverage of those episodes in this feed on Thursdays. We will also be discussing some of the differences between this show and the original trilogy of books, but we will not be spoiling future episodes.
And Kin Folklore will have adult content. So if you're ready to risk it all, like Father President MacPhail, for a little intercession time with Mrs. Coulter, you know, he's like fought everyone. Then dodge those harpies like you got a good story to tell in the land of the dead. Let's go. Okay, so here we are. Episode 5, No Way Out. After leaving Pan behind, which is a sentence that freaking hurts my soul to even say. In episode 4, Lyra and Will arrive in the bleakness that is the land of the dead. And finally, we have arrived at a shithole that is outdone Deepwood Mott and the Northern Air Temple. Finally, we found a place. One of the worst that I've seen. They dodge harpies that torment the dead to find Roger.
Who's grown up? I'm confused. Didn't Roger die when he was like 7 or 8? Like, what? This is like a...
I guess you kind of just keep going and you hit puberty, your voice drops, your facial features change. I guess it's just what happens when you go to the land of the dead. Because you're not really dead, I guess. Is that it?
So they knew that Roger was going to be back. They could have filmed this when he was still a little boy. I don't know. I know that like part of this is like COVID stuff. They really tried to like keep the kids as young as possible, but like they knew that Roger was going to be back on the show in season 3. Like, this is, it's crazy.
I mean, the actor that plays freaking Will has a full beard when he's not on screen. Like, I was looking at Instagram show, like, yo, this guy has a beard. Oh man, it's wild out here. Yeah, definitely. Roger has definitely aged a bit. I guess, you know, Land of the Dead is a tough place. So they dodge the harpies that torment the dead, and they find Roger. Lyra begins to remind Roger about their time together, and as the two reminisce, other people join to listen. Eventually, they tell the dead that their plan is to lead them out. As they start to leave, Lyra is reunited with Lee Scoresby. Pretty dope to see Lee again. Look at my guy out here hanging out in the land of the dead. Looks very surprised to see Lyra, wondering what the fuck's going on, but really cool. Really cool to see him. At the Magisterium, Mrs. Coulter and the Golden Monkey are led to the intercision chamber, where Colty makes a final plea to Dr. Cooper. This works, because Dr. Cooper's like, you know what? I did some crazy shit before, but I'm going to have a change of heart. And she stops the procedure, but Father President MacPhail murks out Dr. Cooper. Roke attempts to stop Father MacPhail, and he's also killed as well. After a struggle, MacPhail prepares to sacrifice himself and his demon, but Mrs. Coulter manages to disarm the bomb. In the Kingdom of Heaven, Alarbus, the archangel that Asriel tortured, that we weren't sure whether he was dead or not, spoiler, he's not dead, delivers his message to Metatron. The message is simple. Asriel is coming for them, and the new knife bearer is not corrupted. Metatron is like, you know what? I'm going to send a message to all you humans. Everybody's going to know what's up. In the Magisterium, Mrs. Coulter believes to have saved Lyra's life until there is divine intervention. A voice says, "You think dust can make you gods. Let us see how you fare without it." A light powers the machine and severs Father MacPhail from his demon. Father MacPhail dies. Done.
Oh, wow.
talk. Ooh, long time coming.
Not too sad about that one.
No. In the land of the dead, Lyra, Will, and Roger see a large ball of light descending from the sky, and it creates a huge explosion.
In episode 6, The Abyss, Mrs. Coulter goes to Fra Pavel, who suddenly has the ability to just, you know, read the alethiometer at rapid speed. Right in front of her. Ask a question, and she gets an answer right away. He's suddenly miraculously like Lyra.
I think that's why Boreal was like, hurry up, Ratty. He knew Ratty was holding out. He was holding out this whole time.
He tells her that Lyra is in the darkness. She heads back to the Republic of Heaven to confront Azrael, who honestly could not care less.
No,
garbage.
Unbothered.
Like, legit is smiling seconds after he learns his daughter is dead. After this exchange, the golden monkey abandons Mrs. Coulter. Azrael goes to inspect the abyss that Metatron created and sees Rudiscati's demon, Sergei, pulled into it. As Sergei falls, he dissolves, and Ruda collapses in Ogunwe's arms, and Serafina Pecola, who is flying towards the Republic, hears her sister's death cry. Serafina shows up at the Republic, and she's ready to murk everybody. I really like this side of Serafina.
Yeah, she was done. No more like mediation. It's like, okay,
no,
you're about to die.
She's like, yeah. What happened to Ruda? Everybody here can die. I really don't care. Great stuff. Great stuff from Serafina.
Yeah.
But Azrael convinces her that the best way to get revenge is to join the rebellion. Azrael then takes his intention craft north to see Yurik. And there he learns that Lyra entered the land of the dead willingly and deduces that she is staging a prison break. Yurik also tells her that he mended the knife.
Yeah, and he was about to murk Azrael too. And we finally also learn why Azrael's demon is a big-ass cat. Because this motherfucker has 9 lives. He's out here surviving all the murder attempts.
In the land of the dead, Lyra has survived the explosion. And with Will and Roger, she continues to lead the dead to the highest point, hoping Will can cut out a door there. She falls towards the abyss and is rescued by one of the harpies. And she strikes a deal with the harpy. In exchange for the true stories from the dead, the harpies will help them get out. Lee finally makes the connection that Will is John Perry's son. And
Yay.
He reunites them in what is probably my favorite scene of this episode. It was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. At the highest point, Will cuts a door into another world, and Roger steps through it first, and his spirit dissolves to rejoin the universe. Back at the Republic, Colty finds out that Lyra's alive and tells Azrael that they have to help her. She also reunites with the golden monkey. Both Serafina and Zephania have a message for Azrael and Mrs. Coulter. They need to shift their focus to Lyra, and the final rebellion has started. Over the course of both episodes, Mary has been in another world learning about the ways of the Mulefa, the creature she encountered at the end of episode 4. She learns their language, but one word seems to elude her, Shraf. Shraf is what the Mulefa need to live. And at the end of the episode, she realizes that she can see it using a spyglass fashioned from amber. Shraf is dust.
So, we lost a few people. And some people we really, really will miss. So, let's take a second here, and let's pour one out for Rudiscati. Man, we love her. Queen of the Lake Lubana clan of witches and her demon Sergei. So let's pour one out for her and Lord Roke, leader of the Gallivespians.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
Pour out a little liquor. Don't let the gin get like that, y'all.
And you know who gets not a drop? Not one little bit of alcohol? Father President McPhail.
Or his stupid demon.
Yeah, a stupid lizard. Who was Cardinal McPhail, then Father McPhail, then Father President McPhail. So many titles for such a shitbag. Like, it's ridiculous. We are rid of this man. He is done. Him and his conniving ways. So what did you think of the episode?
I think that these two episodes, despite having some real high points, are the weakest in the whole 8 episodes. I got problems.
Yeah. So let's talk it out. What are you thinking? What's the things that really bother you?
There's just a lot of shortcuts that don't make sense. And there's lots of places where people have information. It's not clear why they have it. Like, why does Yurik know about the land of the dead? Why does Azrael go to Yurik?
Yeah, I mean, we knew Yurik knew about the land of the dead from previous when he told him not to go, but we don't understand, and we didn't really understand how he knew about that then. And then we were like, well, okay, well, maybe it'll be explained later. But then I don't understand why Azrael goes to Yurik at all. Like, what made him go there?
Yeah, it's a weird scene. But, like, of course Yurik knows about the land of the dead, that it exists, but how does he know what it's like? He describes it to Azrael.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't understand why he knows this. And then there's just like other things that are a little bit confusing, like the conversations between John Perry / Grumman / whatever he's calling himself these days. And Will, he also has information that is not, I don't understand how he gets it. And the biggest problem of this episode is actually a problem in the book as well. It is just too casual when it's like when Will's father tells him he has a demon. It's just like in the book, when I got to that part, I was literally like, wait, are we not going to unpack this? Like, it's just, it is. And I really thought that the show was going to like do a little bit more. I guess there's nothing to do here. It's just kind of like, yeah, when you parted from your internal demon, it became
an actual demon.
It was rough. And then for John Perry to have the ability to guide, to like, he's like a real ghost, right? Like, he guides the demon back towards Azrael's camp.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he have that ability? And also, why does Lee know how to summon him? Like, there's just a lot of things that I felt like weren't explained in this episode.
Well, you know who would fit in really well here? Because the magic feels like we're not getting any explanation. Bran the Broken. Because, yeah, I mean, like, it feels like this is a place where you have the best story, then light comes and you'll be able to escape because, you know, the whole thing is about bringing back, like, yourself from the dead through your memories. And, like, and who had a better story than Bran the Broken?
You want to hear something funny? And I wish what? I had done it now. I was going to post in our Facebook group, does anyone want to take bets on when Paul goes on his first Game of Thrones rant?
Listen, I've already done it. Didn't I do it last week too? I think I did it last week. I don't know. I don't remember. Oh man, but this is definitely it. This is definitely my Bran the Broken rant. He had the best story, and this is why he would have freed them from the dead also. But in this world, Lyra and Will are helping people by telling truthful stories. Let's talk about that. Like, what did you think of that?
So the stuff in the Land of the Dead is genuinely moving to me. I actually really love it. And I felt like the show had a pretty big task ahead of it, because this to me was a standout section from the book. This is the part where I really felt like Philip Pullman had a story he needed to tell about the nature of death and the nature of confronting death. And these chapters are well laid out, and they're, you know, there's some characters missing because the Gallivespians follow Will and Lyra into the Land of the Dead. So you kind of lose their observations, because they're also like, this is absolutely horrible. Like, we need to help. This is really where the Gallivespians in the book are like fully in behind Will and Lyra, because up to this point they were like, why are we doing this? And then when they're in the land of the dead, they're very, everyone's on the same page here. Lyra, Will, the Gallivespians, everyone's like, okay, this is cruel. And so I really love most of what is done in these scenes. And I thought the way that she told the stories, the stuff of the harpies, it was all really beautiful. And I just think it's really interesting that, like, Lyra got her name, Lyra Silvertongue.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was able to fool an armored bear by lying. And the Lyra we meet in season one is a noted liar.
Mm-hmm.
She gets called a liar by literally everyone. Mrs. Coulter calls her a liar. The headmaster calls her a liar. Like, mm-hmm. everybody, even Pan calls her out on lying. And this Lyra, without needing to be prompted, is once she gets to the land of the dead, she is fully authentic and honest. And she understands that she can't lie to the harpy. And she suddenly has this to me, this is the episode where Will and Lyra are becoming adults.
Yeah.
This is the episode for me where I'm seeing the two of them grow in a way that makes a lot of sense. And they're no longer just running on the fumes of their instincts. They're making decisions because they are right and because they want to try to do the right thing. And it's really beautiful, this notion of, like, they don't know if they can do this, right? Will can't use the knife in the land of the dead. They're just kind of mm-hmm. like, we're going to see.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's a theory. They can't really, like, and they don't, and that's the part that I think was really interesting, is that she doesn't try to lie and say, like, yeah, they give them, like, the sales pitch. She's like, yeah, we're not sure. Like you just said, like, we're going to see. This is our best chance. This is our best shot, right? Like, this is where we're going to try. We'll get to the highest point, do all that. You know, I think that that really does, it resonates. It's really interesting to see that she has grown in this way to understand, okay, this is not something that I'm going to be able to fake my way out of. Mm-hmm. I need to be able to talk to people, and that's going to be the thing that's going to win them over. And maybe it's also coming how much she sacrificed. I mean, sacrificing her connection to Pan to be able to come and save Roger, realizing that some of, like, what got Roger killed in the first place was her blind kind of, like, you know, faith in, like, what things were going to happen when they got to where they were going, and the way she kind of, like, you know, the way she kind of, like, used her words and, like, kind of, like, you know, she was out here selling wolf tickets most of the time, and Roger was one of her biggest followers, you know what I mean? Even though he knew she was full of it, he still would follow her. And so that ended up eventually hurting her friend, and I think she's like, all right, I got to be real about this if I'm going to save Roger. So
yeah, I just I think that the Lyra of season one maybe would have not been completely transparent with the dead.
Mm-mm.
She would have.
I agree.
She would have been buying into her own hype. Yeah, yeah, we can definitely get out of here, and when we get there, it's going to be wonderful. We'll release you back into the world, and none of it would have been true. But I really appreciate that she becomes like a whole new character. Like, she's fully developed here, and it's beautiful to see.
Yeah, I mean, she's not gotten any better though at naming people or things. Like, Gracious Wings, could we find a better name? I like the harpy that she names. Good harpy. But Gracious Wings made me just think of, like, you know, should I be humming a Maxwell song right now? Like, what's going on?
Maxwell song.
Gracious Wings, those gracious wings, those gracious wings. I was like, that's the first thing that came to mind. I was like, wow, okay, cool, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, listen, she got her name from Eric, so
she
doesn't have a lot of experience naming things.
So funny. What do you think about her reuniting with Lee?
Oh, that was really special. So they cut out, as you well know, something from the book that we will not discuss because mm-hmm. it's terrible. It's really weird. With Yorick learning about Lee, and then, you know, Yorick shares that with Lyra and Will. The fact that she didn't know Lee was dead but gets to see him and hear that from him, I thought it was a beautiful moment for both of them, because Lee never got to Lyra. in season two. So it was just good to see them reconnect.
Yeah, this is a place where the show really does clean up the book. Like, this is this is really good. Oh man, I mean, listen, for show watchers, we'll just leave it here. Yurik eats freaking Lee Scoresby, man, in the book.
It's
horrible. Oh my god,
I don't know what he was thinking. I honestly don't understand why that part was written.
I don't understand. I'm glad they freaking cleaned that up.
Like, it's done out of like some kind of weird respect ritual. It's like
yeah, he's like eating him because he respects him, and like his energy is gonna feed his like search for Lyra. It's weird. It's so I'm like listening to the book because I was doing the book on tape on Audible. And I'm driving along, and things were going well. And then I'm like, wait a second. Yurik is eating Lee? I had to run it back a couple of times. It was pretty weird.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The Amber Spyglass book has, like, multiple moments like that where I'm like, I absolutely don't understand why this is happening. But they, you know, they clean up a lot of that in the show.
Yeah, I'm really appreciative of how they dealt with it in the show and how they kept everybody relevant, and they kept it, you know, it was good. It seemed, for me, it made more sense of how the characters would respond. And it definitely connects the Grumman, John Perry, Will thing when Lee is there in the Land of the Dead, because it's like this, you know, Grumman or Lee Parry was the only one to like had that connection with Lee Scoresby's search, right? He like that we find. I mean, Will and Lyra don't know that he had found him. So this is actually a really good moment to like connect the two of them again, especially since Will was like really feeling the weight of maybe never seeing his dad again.
Yeah, the way that he lost his dad is truly horrible, considering that he initially, you know, went through the portal so that he could find out more about his dad. I really love this scene between, I said already, but it's worth underlining, the scene between Will and his dad. Again, this episode to me is about a lot of things, but one of the main things is that Lyra and Will are really growing up. He tells his dad, point blank, I didn't do the things you asked. I'm not a warrior. And his dad accepts and respects that and says, but you're something more than that. It's like you can see the pride he feels in talking to his son and seeing that his son is doing this like incredibly important, but also just extraordinary thing. A lot of folks were angry at the fact that Lyra left Pan so that she could go and find someone who was dead. Cause like, what's the point? He's dead. There's nothing you can do for him. Mm-hmm. But the very notion that Lyra and Will see this injustice and they decide there is something we can do. We can get them out of here. And they don't even really know. They're kind of improvising. But they go through it anyway. It's just like a really beautiful thing. And I think that John, who wasn't expecting of this, he, you know, sees that his son is the knife bearer. But he also sees that Will is doing something with the knife that none of the previous bearers would have even considered doing. They all use that knife to enrich themselves, to explore. None of them used it to help other people. And so it's really beautiful for them to have this moment, because I think it's also the moment where Will is no longer feeling guilt, like he's a disappointment, because he has a lot of feelings about leaving his mom behind, not doing what his father asked, not going straight to Asriel like his father asked him to, and sticking by Lyra. And he just, no, this was your choice, but this is also important. It's really, I love it.
I do too. I really loved it. And he sets the tone too. I mean, there's some real things that we'll unpack later that said in this conversation about kind of like, you know, giving him a heads up of what might be coming, you know, what the restrictions are for Will, like with having this power, if he wants to be kind of like still on the up and up and do all this other stuff. So that was really really strong too. And Will, you know, we don't want to spoil anything that's ahead, so we'll leave it out. But I think like,
well, it's in the conversation episode. He tells him, he gives him important information in this episode, which is that he can't stay forever in another world. He can travel between worlds like Boreal did, right? But you can't linger with your demon outside in another world for too long because it will kill you. And I think that's important information because we have multiple people in the story who are in different worlds. Mary is in a different world than she's supposed to be in. She's supposed to be in Will's world. Right now, Lyra's in a different world. She will be returning to her world at some point. But, like, I don't quite... Is Azrael's... Actually, that's another question. Is Azrael's Republic in Lyra's world?
You know...
I don't think we know that. So
I don't think we know. Yeah.
So, you know, he tells them, see, I still want to call the man Grooman. John Perry. John Perry tells Will that they have to go back to the Republic because, well, to the Republic for the first time because they haven't been there before because that's where the demons are going. I take back what I said. I don't know that that's Lyra's world. I was just sort of assuming that the Republic was in her world. It could be that Azrael's Republic is in a different world entirely. But if that's the case, Azrael's in a different world. So is Ogunwe. So is Ruda. Like, there's a lot of characters who they got at some point. John Perry is telling us something important. They have to return to the world they're from because it's not safe for their demon / their soul to be in the other world for too long.
I agree. No, I think it's a valuable piece of information.
And it's the only information John gives him in this conversation, by the way, that I do endorse because he would know this.
Yep.
Spent many years in a different world, he would know this information. I don't know how he gets all the other information.
Yeah.
But this part makes
sense. You know what information we're getting? We're getting the information that as part of this transition to adulthood, there is some sparks flying between Will and Lyra. And you know who's not feeling it?
Roger.
Roger. Roger is out.
When Will walks up and is like, "Hi, I'm Will Perry," Roger's like, "Who?" You're like, "Yeah, what up?" It's hilarious. They're like the only two people, I think, that are not realizing that there's some real feeling between these two.
Yeah,
and listen, 100%. Who could blame them? Lyra's a good-looking girl. She's brave. Will's a good-looking guy. Eventually, you know,
something's gonna happen. Yeah, you know, the sparks are gonna fly.
Poor Roger, though.
Yeah, I mean, talk about, you know, dying a second death.
Yeah, poor kid.
Oh man, and what's really strange as we close out, like, talking about the Land of the Dead and kind of move on to some other things is, man, there's no armored bears there. There's no witches. What is up with that?
I have a lot of questions about this because, as we noted last season, when witches die, and Ruda did it when she died, they call out to their god, the god of death, Yamba Apki. And, I have questions. Does this mean that the witches go somewhere else when they die? Is there a section of the Land of the Dead for non-human, non-mortal? I mean, the witches are mortal, but they have very long lifespans. Or is it just that... No, I was going to say, is it that there's few witches because they live so long? But that doesn't make sense because we just saw in season 2 a lot of witches died. You know, yeah. Mrs. Coulter...
Yeah,
she did her thing, but
yeah.
I don't know. This is an interesting question. I would love to know more about this, and perhaps this is covered in the other books, which I have not read. But I was struck by the fact that there's no Gallivespians. You know, like there's no other species of these are all humans. We don't see any Mulefa there, for instance. So it's interesting.
It is a very interesting thing that it's only the humans we can't know whether it's only the humans from Lyra's world, but, you know, those are the ones that we meet.
Yeah,
you know
I don't think like, it so- is because the little girl, the first little girl who speaks to Lyra when they arrive, asks her, "Are you from a world where they had demons?"
Demons, yeah. That's,
so there,
that's a good point.
I think there are people from Will's world. His dad is there.
Yeah.
So there are people from other worlds where, you know, they're like the predominant sentient species as humans, but we don't see any of the like animal or magical folks there. So I'm curious about that.
Yeah, me too. It'd be interesting to see if he ever, if it's in any of the other books, you know, which we haven't read, or some other thing. So yeah, that is an interesting.
And if we have a listener who has read, I would love to hear from them. So please shoot us an email, because this is a question. This is my biggest question from this season.
Yeah.
That feels like a little unresolved. Like what happens to these folks when they die? I don't remember reading this. And so if folks want to shoot us an email, a tweet, you know, hit us up on Facebook, that would be great.
100%. That'd be awesome. And speaking of Mrs. Coulter, which we're always speaking of Mrs. Coulter, we learn a lot about her, you know, in this episode. We learn that she's not, you know, a true believer anymore. You know, that she tells Dr. Cooper that she believes in a lie and that all this is a lie. So she's kind of denouncing, like, she's no longer like magisterium or bust, like we saw in the beginning. You know, she shows some remorse for the death of Dr. Cooper and Lord Roke. Like, she's actually like broken up by this. Like, so we're seeing, as we've been seeing, kind of like her develop throughout all the seasons, but also especially in this season, we're finding out that she's like really got some, she's changed. She is changing. You know what I mean? Things are changing for her.
Yeah.
What did you think of her?
If we go back to Bolvanger, that was like pure death and destruction. And not only did she not feel any remorse over the people who died there, she killed someone, you know? And the first thing she says to Dr. Cooper is, "I thought you were dead." Like she didn't even look to see if Dr. Cooper was alive. This is real character growth for her too.
And it's not just implied, you know, like there's real things that happen, and chiefly like two conversations that I really love, like the one that she had with Serafina Pekkala and the one she has with the Golden Monkey. Like, what did you think of the conversation with Serafina? Let's start there.
I loved it. I loved it. These two characters are opposites in so many ways.
Yeah.
Serafina is like, genuinely cares, has always genuinely cared about Lyra, like not just about her as part of the prophecy, but like has always had a real love for Lyra. And Mrs. Coulter spent the first 12-13 years of Lyra's life pretending she didn't exist. And to have them, Serafina is the other mother on the show that we know has lost a child and has felt that deeply, because her and Father Coram had a son together and he died. This conversation, when Mrs. Coulter first started speaking to her, I immediately knew, you're talking to the wrong lady, because she also has felt your loss. She lost her son.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's going there looking for violence. Mm-hmm. At this point, she's lost her daughter. She has no respect or love for Asriel anymore, because she blames him for losing Lyra. And her own demon has fully rejected her, which is not something she's used to. She's used to rejecting him. Yeah. This woman is as close to being hopeless as possible. And she goes to a person that she knows has every reason to kill her and tries to provoke her into killing her, tries to get her, even if Seraphina doesn't kill her, she wants her to hurt her. And Serafina meets her with love, compassion, and empathy. But honesty, you know, she's not just like, oh, everything's going to be okay. She's very honest with her. She says, loving Lyra has changed you. And that's important. That experience that you had of loving your child has changed who you are at the core of it. And I think Mrs. Coulter needs to hear this in order to go, you know, reconcile with the Golden Monkey. Like, I think obviously Lyra being alive is a big thing, but she needs to hear that she has changed, because she is a character who is always confronting the bad parts of her and self-hating. And Serafina says, but this love you have for your child made a difference. And you need to acknowledge that part too.
Yeah, there's like This is a book that I've read before called The Artist's Way, where Julia Cameron talks about people being, she's using it in a term of like being a believing mirror, like a someone who can hold up the value that a person has, you know, especially when artists are struggling with doing things. And I feel like this is what Serafina Pekel is doing in just life with Mrs. Coulter's, like, your love, showing her herself, like, hey, you're struggling with all these things. You think that it can't be, but let's look at what's happened to you. Look at who you are. And, you know, that believing mirror, everyone needs that. Everyone needs someone to say, hey, I see you. I see your change. I see your growth. And there weren't a lot of people. She had to, like, kind of play this game with the Magisterium to kind of, like, you know, try to see how she could save Lyra. Her and Asriel have a very complicated relationship. The people who were on the council don't really trust her. There weren't a lot of people who were doing that for her other than us, maybe, as an audience. So in story, this is the first person to actually say, oh, like, you're changing and you're changed forever because of the love that you have for your daughter. That was, it was just beautiful. I really loved that scene.
It's,
and
the thing, we are like big Ruth Wilson stans mm-hmm. on this podcast. Because in my opinion, she's the most compelling part of this whole show. No disrespect to any of the other actors. But every time she has a conversation, an unlikely conversation with a character, I'm surprised. This is like last season when she had that conversation with Lee. That was a wonderful conversation that illuminated both Lee's worldview and let us see that Mrs. Coulter herself was missing something in her life. And that's why she was the way that she was. This conversation kind of like is a salve for that. Like, you were missing something, but when you embraced the love that had potential, it changed you. And so I love it. Serafina is a great character too. And she just, every time she speaks, I'm like, yeah, drop them. drop the truth line.
Bars. Yeah, she got some bars going. There we go.
She's got some real bars always. But
real
she,
bars.
It was this conversation I thought was another standout in the episode.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And it leads us, you know, eventually here, she finds out that Lyra is alive and goes straight to the Golden Monkey and tells him. And I think it's because of, you know, it's probably the part of her that's always loved Lyra, the Golden Monkey. Mm-hmm. He's the part of her that, like most demons, is the part of her that is good and really has been a companion. But the sense in this conversation is it really hits on what we talked about in earlier episodes of this podcast from previous seasons about the level of self-loathing and hate and things that Mrs. Coulter felt towards herself in the ways that she treated the Golden Monkey and what that did and how that kind of like played out. And this is the time where she's vulnerable and speaks really truthfully about what that was and why she was that way. And they make up and they make peace. And she really makes up with herself, forgives herself. Like, it's really a beautiful scene. And it's one of the ones that I was like in like as a super good counterbalance to the moment where she wants to die at the hands of Serafina Pecula, to like coming to the terms of like what all of this has been about for her and making peace with her demon. It's really, really beautiful.
Yeah, I think for me, this really solidified that the demons are what makes someone a full person in this world. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when Lyra is doing completely irrational stuff, which is a thing that sometimes works in her benefit, Pan is usually the voice of reason. Like, maybe we shouldn't do this. It seems dangerous. When Mrs. Coulter is her worst self, the Golden Monkey doesn't speak to her, at least out loud, but like he always gives her that look, you know, those big eyes, like, are we sure about this? Like, I know what you're feeling. And when they're in the cave in the beginning of the season, she even tells him, like, I don't even want to talk about it. You know, she's like, he can read her that deeply, and they understand each other without really speaking. And then we see Asriel with Stel Maria, who is routinely being like, bruh, you are pretending you don't care about Lyra. You are not giving her the consideration that she deserves. And for dumb reasons, like, maybe there is something to Lyra. Everyone else seems really concerned with her. And so this conversation between the Golden Monkey and Mrs. Coulter, I kind of for me solidified like, oh yes, this makes sense. This is her, is a full person. This part of her that rejected her because he was so disgusted that they couldn't save Lyra, and so despondent and so depressed. And also, I think, was a little angry that in losing Lyra, her first reaction was anger. She'd never even let the sadness come to the forefront. Mm-hmm. And the Golden Monkey was like, ew, can't even deal with this. I'm grieving. I need to get somewhere else. And she comes to him and says, I always thought you were the weak one. I'm the weak one. You are the brave one. You're the strong one. I loved it. Great conversation. Even though it was one-sided. It's not really a conversation, is it?
Yeah, because he don't say nothing. You know, only once in this season did I hear him. It was wild. So I think I texted you. I was like, "What, the Golden Monkey talked?" Like, it was weird.
Book he does have like a single sentence, but it's like, it's again, Philip Pullman is like very casually dropping things in this book. It's like the Golden Monkey spoke, and also Will has a demon.
Oh man. So, I mean, let's talk about a couple of things that are really difficult. Obviously, there's some sad moments in the episode. One of the most chief ones being Ruta's death. It's bad for the war effort. It's super sad. And maybe you could explain a little bit about why she won't be able to be whole in the afterlife because of the way that she dies.
So Sergei gets pulled into the abyss, which makes sense because what they use Ruta's death as a storytelling device so that we know what it means that the abyss pulls in dust. So Sergei's like, you know, surveying the abyss and looking around, and he just gets sucked in and he can't stop himself, and Ruta can't communicate with him anymore because it just draws in dust, which Asriel is delighted about because he thinks this is a good thing that they can use this in the war. As we said earlier, we don't actually know what the afterlife looks like for witches, but this abyss, it's not like you go to the land of the dead. It just keeps going and going and going and going and going. And that part of your soul is never going to stop falling. And this is important information for us to know because the abyss is huge.
Yeah.
And they're about to have a war, you know, 50 feet away from it. And Asriel's hyped about that because he wants to use it. But like, this is very sad for Ruta. So here's what I think happens when people die in this world with demons. I think that when the demons kind of turn into dust, the person is reabsorbing their soul as they move into the afterlife. If part of Ruta's soul is drifting in this abyss forever, she's not fully whole. And I think that's why Serafina says, I can sense her still, because that part of her is still just falling. It's neither dead or alive. It's just falling, falling, falling. For a story that set up this whole notion that even though the land of the dead is bleak and terrible, at least it's stable and they're in a place and there's other people with them. Imagine spirits just falling for eternity, not being returned to the universe like the people who were freed from the land of the dead, not completely disappearing, but just falling, and that part of you is sentient, like it knows that that's what's happening to you.
Yeah, that's rough. I love that take and that like kind of thought about what happens there. It's tough because we love this character to think about that would be how things go for her. Perhaps maybe as things progress, there's some healing in that, but it's really rough because you know what? Perception around what all these things mean is really important in this world because I honestly think like Serafina reframing what it means for Lyra to be Eve was one of the most powerful things of these couple of episodes.
She lays out kind of the thesis here.
Yeah, 100%. You know, saying that Eve was not the original sinner, but rather a heroine who dared to experience and took a leap of faith. So she lays out like, hey, we kind of have this wrong, this idea that Eve did something that was so wrong. She really was like one who was brave and able to experience. And we're seeing Lyra do it. And so, you know, these reframings of like death, of like what it means to be Eve, of, you know, what this abyss that's opening up, these ideas of like what's happening, is really interesting. And I love what they're doing with all of these topics.
Absolutely. I love it too. I think we all needed Serafina to lay it out for us.
Yeah,
because
agreed.
The like prophecy, the she will defeat death, the, you know, she's going to free us all of that stuff, even though the show has done a pretty good job of laying out what the actual prophecy is from season one. It's never been really clear because our framing of Eve is just like Mrs. Coulter, that Eve is the person who damned us all. Took us further away from divinity. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Serafina responds, absolutely not. That's not how the witches see her. That's not what the real story of Eve. Eve just wanted to experience. She just wanted to have a full life. And I think that we needed that. Because for you and I have even talked offline about how this idea that Lyra is Eve, we really struggled with it.
Oh, I was struggling. You told me, you know what? I think you're going to be, you know, because you had read ahead and you were like, I think we're going to be okay once you get there. And this laying out of what the purpose is of this really changed my whole view of the story. I was like, oh, okay. I get it. You know what I mean? Like, I was struggling for a little bit on this.
Yeah.
One,
and so. Like you said, it's all about perception. Like, mm-hmm. If we take the authority's framing of Eve's behavior and put that aside and say we didn't know the full story, then Eve seems just like a regular person who wanted to know more about the world, and that's why she made the decision that she made.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's like important to think about like why that plays out with the magisterium, like kind of driving the narrative, is really connected to Lyra's mission of defeating death, right? It's like, that's a big part of it, of being able to like, you know, the afterlife is the only thing that the authority and the magisterium and all of these like, you know, symbols and systems can have to like make people do a certain thing in their life, right? So if you believe that there's a heaven and a hell, you act like there's a heaven and a hell. And even the lady who was in the Land of the Dead kind of like says, you know, like, I wasted my life trying to live by all these rules and I didn't actually get to experience. So it's really interesting kind of reframing of what this means.
Yeah, I love it. And I also like the resolution for the Land of the Dead, which is a little like the way that it's described in the show, I think Ruta says this, I don't remember exactly, but it's basically like purgatory, like you're just kind of mm-hmm. lingering there, and mm-hmm. the characters will still have to pass through the Land of the Dead when they die. So like, you still, when you die as a human at least, you still will go to the Land of the Dead, but as long as you tell the harpies the truthful story of your life, then you will be able to pass through and rejoin the universe. It really reminded me of The Good Place and how like The Good Place, I don't think this is really a spoiler, the show has been off for a couple years, but like in The Good Place, they play with this idea of like, what if the people in heaven are just like kind of stuck there and bored?
Mm-hmm.
And could there be an option where they can just like leave, you know? And yeah. They don't necessarily, I don't think The Good Place goes as far as like this show and rejoining the universe, but like I like this idea. It's not, Lyra had, she didn't abolish the Land of the Dead, but she made death a thing where you, it's a journey, and there's something that you can get out of this journey, which is that like the last thing that you might do before you rejoin the universe is you recount the joy from your life. You you recount the good experiences that you had that made your life fall. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is really beautiful.
And just so, one last thing I wanted to say about The Land of the Dead. There's no good, bad, or otherwise. Father MacPhail will go to the Land of the Dead despite all of the horrible things that he's done, because there's no, like, this is heaven, this is hell. Everybody's going to go there. And as Father MacPhail is in there, maybe he will reflect while he's taking that journey to the door on his life and on the good that he managed in his life. Or maybe he will decide not to go. We don't know, but I like the fact that they remove, like, here's where the bad people go and here's where the good people go, because people are complex.
Yeah. I just think that he should be like Zhao, just walking around in the freaking fog, not knowing where the hell he is. You know what I mean? That would be ideal.
Listen, if he went into that abyss, I would have no...
Yeah.
I would not be sad. Father MacPhail was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not love him. And, you know, similarly, there's Asriel, who remains trash. Not much to say other than the one mistake Yurik ever made in this world was not murking Asriel. That's it. That's all I got.
Not only is he trash, I love that everybody in the show, all his allies, recognize that. That it's like open, that everybody thinks he's trash. Nobody likes him. Mrs. Coulter can't stand him. Serafina can't stand him. A good way at first trusted him, but over the course of time, a good way is like, you're garbage. Zephania also knows that he's trash. Like, they all know he's trash, but he's necessary because he's the leader of the rebellion. Hate this guy. Do not want to deal with him anymore. Yurik should have snuffed him out. If Stel Maria had just tripped and fallen into the abyss, we may have learned how Dust was drawn into the abyss another way. I'm just saying.
That would have been great. I mean, even the most trash dude in this show, fake ass Crispin Cole. You know what I mean? The crispiest of the crispy. Yeah, I called him Crisp in, not Kristen, because he's Sir Crispy. Even Father Gomez, who is the worst, fucking hates this guy. So it's like Inception levels of like fuck boy. Like it's like literally that. Like, you suck. Oh man, I can't stand Father Gomez. Asriel, Father MacPhail, very clearly guys that don't have any, like, I just don't feel like they have much redeeming quality. So
no,
there it is.
I mean, Father Gomez first tried to, like, make Father MacPhail feel bad about touching the golden monkey. Like, bruh, he's the father president, so even if you feel like you're more devoted to the authority than him, be quiet.
Yeah.
Then he, instead of being like, oh, I did some penance, he's like, actually, here's how I'm going to make up this. I'm going to go and kill the serpent. Like, yeah. Trash. I hate this guy. Imagine this guy's been in like 2 episodes and we hate him with such a passion already.
Oh man. It's like, yeah, really, it's really bad.
It's really good.
It's tough. He ain't even been here for that long.
Good
he's terrible.
Job to the writers, because I cannot stand this man and we barely know him.
We barely know him. So do we wanna like talk about some things through the amber spyglass that happened in this world?
Let's do it.
So this week in the Amber Spyglass, we're going to talk about the Malefa. And the Malefa are some of Philip Pullman's most interesting creations as they appear on the show. In the book, they are a species that evolved in the world differently from humans. They have trunks like elephants, and their feet include hooks that allow them to use the round sheep pods as wheels, basically like a rollerblading kind of thing. As in the show, when they first appear, Mary is shocked at their anatomy. But the Malefa also notice something about Mary. She cannot see Shruff, the substance in their world that gives them life. When Mary uses the amber spyglass, she discovers that Shruff is dust, which humans cannot perceive with their eyes. These seed pods are important to the Malefa's way of life, as important as air and water are to humans. Without the seed pods, they will die. The seed pods come from the trees, and the trees rely on dust to grow. Over many years, the dust has been slowly flowing out of the trees, and there have been fewer trees and seed pods. When the abyss opens in the show, that process accelerates, leading Mary to panic because she's not able to figure out what's causing it. The Malefa in the book have a much more complex society. They have marriages, a basic system of government. They share histories through their stories. Their children attend school and learn from their elders. Mary discovers that the Malefa aren't very different from people except for having evolved different because of their environment, which is it's really awesome.
Yeah, I love it. And also, they basically live in paradise. It's not super clear in the show, but the door that Will opens from the land of the dead opens into this world. I just love the Malefa.
Me too. So what did you see as the theme of this episode?
So these two episodes, I just found myself really seeing faith. And initially, I thought more about like blind faith, because in episode five, you can't help but think about how like ridiculous Father McPhail is in having this like blind faith in the authority. And then the authority is actually what leads to his death. And so I initially had thought like blind faith is sort of the thing. You've got all these people following Asriel, you have the authority, but really it's not just blind faith. There's other types of faith in here too. And because this story is so critical of the church, many people believe its central theme is opposed to having faith. But faith is like the only common denominator that both the heroes, the antagonists, and you know, some of these people aren't antagonists, they're villains, have in common. And the most obvious demonstration is like the faith that Father McPhail and Father Gomez have in serving to just agreeing to do violence in order to serve the authority. But there's a lot of different types of faith in this episode. If not for faith in the cause, then what would have brought together Asriel, the Gallivespians, Ogunwe, the witches, and the exiled angels? That's also a type of faith. And if not for faith in Lyra, Serafina wouldn't even be there. She wouldn't join the cause. Especially when she gets there and sees that Asriel is the leader of the... I mean, I guess she knew that Asriel was the leader, but like we know Serafina doesn't trust Asriel. She doesn't trust Mrs. Coulter. So these are her enemies, but she has faith in Lyra. And if not for faith in themselves, like why would Lyra and Will even enter the land of the dead, leave their demons behind, and believe that they could lead the dead into a different world? The entire story is about faith, and every character is a believer in something in their own way.
Yeah, no, 110%. And there's some things that's going to come up that's going to show how much this faith plays out. Yeah, so I agree. I totally agree. And it has already. No, it's a great, great theme. I love the theme for these episodes. Well, that will do it. We are so thankful for you guys listening and checking out, and we're glad that you're enjoying. We hope that you're enjoying the show. We're glad that you're hanging out with us and listening to us talk about it. Please, like, join in the conversation. Hit us up at any of our social media, KinFolklorePod at Instagram, KinFolklorePod on Twitter. Also, you can email us at KinFolklore@gmail.com or hit us up and join our Facebook group over at KinFolklore. And, we'll see you next time.
And from the bottom of our hearts, have a wonderful, wonderful holiday season.
Yeah, definitely.
Bye, everyone.